I'm Amanda Burndown from Montclair State University, and I've learned so much from all these presentations. My colleagues and I are talking about something slightly different, which is what are the perceptions of food access, particularly to healthy foods, among a particular population of typically low-wage workers, which is childcare workers. I have no relationships to disclose. So, as many of you probably participate in the childhood obesity prevention work, you probably know that daycare centers, early childcare centers, have become a real focus as a place where we might be able to intervene to prevent childhood obesity. What's really interesting, and I wish that I had tape recorded what the previous presenter just said about giving policies to people without necessarily the means to implement them, which is one of the premises that underlies what we're talking about, which is that so often the childcare workers are low-wage employees, and what is their own personal relationships with and access to food, given that they are the population who is implementing these policies. So we set out to explore the perceptions of the local food environments and access to healthy foods among childcare workers in New Jersey. So why does this matter? We have two reasons why it matters, but I'll tell you that right before this, I was in the expo hall and I was interacting with someone who was trying to tell me about his curriculum and how interesting it was, and he asked me what my presentation was about, I think so he could then, you know, tailor his pitch to me. And so I told him what it was about, and he said, "Oh boy, that's really a niche market." "Really?" And he said, "Yeah, well, I guess not. I shouldn't have said that, because really there's so many daycares, right?" I said, "Right." And he goes, "And that's so many kids that need to be fed." I said, "I know, but this is about the daycare workers." And he said, "Oh, well, who cares about the daycare workers?" "I do." So really the primary, I would say, or one of the primary perspectives here is just a social justice perspective. And here's how we sort of conceptualize this. I will say that my ability to be standing here today as a faculty member, researcher, is in part due to my having been able to continue my career while being a parent. I had access to good quality daycare, and that allows me to have professional fulfillment and mobility in my career. And I suspect that the same may be true for many of you and many of your colleagues. Here's the thing. The market rate wages for daycare are very low, and that causes serious economic stress for the primarily women who take care of our children. And so then what is their lived experience like? So one of our participants told us, you know, a lot of us are on welfare, where we need food stamps just to get food. And they're often parents caring for their own children and other dependents at home. And although it's outside our scope here, I would just say that it also pushes daycare workers to live in environments where there's a lot more endemic dangers and risks. And so there's this whole sort of system that these women are living in. And then there's also issues of food justice. And so here's just one quote from one of our participants. I'll describe them in a minute. "At the ShopRite that I go to, there's produce that's organic, that's available, but not much else." She's like, "You know what? I don't know whether there is or isn't such a thing as organic milk, but I can tell you that it's not at my shop, right?" And then the other piece is just from a very practical perspective. You have women and men working in daycare centers who are with young children who are learning to eat and then who are feeding themselves long periods of the day. So very often, they're primarily the people feeding our children. They're also human beings. So if they're hungry, or if they're unfamiliar with certain types of foods, or if they're familiar with them but can't afford those foods, what is their affect and experience going to be like in the process of feeding children? So it just, I think the point about the ability to implement policies is a really, really important point. So we developed some semi-structured guides to do focus groups and interviews, and we conducted them with childcare workers in two different centers. And we wanted to ask about, what do you do when you buy food? What are your experiences? What foods are available? And what's it like for you as a person buying food? So these were our methods. That's my friend, Dr. Stephanie Silvera, listening on the very oddly placed speakers on my computer monitor. Basically, we did the standard methods, you know, recorded, transcribed, reviewing for themes, and we're still working on our code book. The participants that we're describing to you today are 19 females from two different childcare centers, both in northern New Jersey, but really different kinds of centers. Center number one was a university-based childcare center. It's slightly smaller, about 50 staff, largely college-educated. It's a unionized facility, much higher wages than ordinarily, and the participants were mostly white and moderate SES. Center number two was a community-based childcare center. It's bigger, about 80 staff. College degrees are not the norm. The wages are low. And participants were primarily African or Caribbean American and lower SES women. It's interesting because there's also a large Latina population. And so far, they've not been as engaged in these focus groups. So their voices really aren't represented here. So just to give you, we really did want to spend most of our time giving their voices to a broader audience. So here are some of the kinds of things that people talked about in their shopping environment, right? It's overwhelming, it's busy, it's crowded. Why am I here yet again? I feel like I'm living my whole life in the supermarket. But then there was also, and this is particularly at center two, a sense of a sort of less than, right? So where we get to shop is gross, it's filthy. But yeah, you can save money, you know? It's crowded, the food's not great, but that's what we need to do. And then these two very interesting different comments about Whole Foods, right? So one saying, oh, Whole Foods, everyone's so nice and friendly, I see lots of people. And then the other one saying, you know, they're not very nice. Like, you ask them something and they kind of look at you like, you should know that. As you might imagine, budget constraints came up a lot in these conversations. And they came up really clustering in two ways. One is, this is why we shop in particular stores. So Walmart. It's affordable, that's why I go there. And then I love this quote about the ShopRite having phenomenal prices because you can get these big, massive slices of pizza and a can of soda for $3.50 and it's great quality. You know, I think we need to hear that and know that more. Some people also talked about budget from the reverse perspective, why I don't shop at particular stores. So I would love to shop at Whole Foods, I'd love to shop at Trader Joe's, but the prices are just so high. One person said, look, I would love to go there. I would want to walk in with my paycheck and say, okay, here's what I make, so how about you cut your prices in half and then I can actually buy some food here. And this quote here on the bottom left, I was the moderator. So the participant was an African-American woman saying, you know, these kinds of stores are more affordable for, like, you guys. Clearly talking to me. It was, and she was uncomfortable, as you can see from her quote. She sort of didn't want to go there, but didn't want to go there, and there was definitely a lot about race. And actually, we have a poster tomorrow at 4:30, I think, specifically about race within this particular study. Family needs was another big, important driver, just like you would imagine. So things like keeping kosher, things like one worker at a childcare center, too, she's been working with a nutritionist, so she's really making an effort to eat healthy, but her family is not there with her. So she's talking about, and that's this quote, she's talking about that, you know, she ends up doing cooking for herself, but then she's got to go get something less healthy for her family. And then you'll see the fuller quote that this comes from, but just quantity. My kids like to eat, right? They get tired of things. And then here's a really interesting economic and family relationship dynamic, right? I bought my husband this chicken at Fairway. He thought it was the best thing he ever ate. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? It's $3 more than it is at ShopRite. ShopRite's good enough for you. Don't get used to it. And then some quotes that really show the ways that some of these multiple factors interact with one another. So this is a very poignant moment. In one of the focus groups, one of the women was saying, you know, her daughter's overweight. And she was really wrestling with, I want to feed you healthy foods. I want you to lose weight. I want my kid to lose weight. But you know what? I can afford spaghetti. So that's what we're having. Someone was talking about buying brand name chicken as being healthier, and I think it's interesting what the perceptions of that are, but it seems to be around freshness and overall quality, and so really making it very clear, I can buy the more healthy chicken, but you're going to have to eat less of it. I think Dr. Lukens talked about food banks. And we did ask about food banks and food pantries and other emergency food sources. And there was a very clear and individual sort of calculus that happens. So, you know, they're good. They talked about needing to go to different neighborhoods to get better quality food at food banks, but also what's socially acceptable. So I'm not going to take home bread that has mold in it. I'd rather now pay my electric bill and use some of the money to buy groceries. We also learned a lot about discrimination. So some of the participants talked about going into stores that they perceived as having healthier food options, but really not feeling welcome. Everybody, it was the look. You get that look. And people also talked about safety, perceived safety as a factor of whether they go to a store or not. So you know, one person's like, I won't even go to that Pathmark because I don't want to drive there. This was a really interesting conversation, very long, many participants talking about some of the different stores, and one of the participants was like, I live between these two stores. I'm not going to the one that's like my people. I'm going to this other one that's outside of my neighborhood. I'd rather deal with the looks, but still be able to avoid the drama and the fighting. This is fascinating. So some participants, because of these experiences, they said, forget it, I'm not going to those stores. And so here are some of the quotes. But others said, you know what, we're going to push through because I need to get what I need to get. Right? And so before I started going to Trader Joe's, I thought it was going to be all white people, and I walk in, and it's not all white people, which was also prompted very interesting discussion in that focus group. And some people saying, you know what, my family needs what my family needs, so whatever it's going to be, I'm going to have to live through that experience. I think one of the biggest things we found is that it's not simple. And there's a lot of experiences. So one of the participants from the community-based center said, you know, we want to eat right. Of course we want to eat right. But it's really hard because of money and because of these other experiences of discrimination. I wish that places like Walmart and Pathmark would give organic and gluten-free options so we could have a whole conversation about whether or not that's the way to make dietary changes that are healthier for your family. But there certainly seems to be a food justice and access component there. And so understanding and supporting healthy food access could really help reduce our disparities and could also help us engage this population of workers who are really, they're feeding our kids, you know, literally and figuratively. So we actually feel like we have not really reached saturation yet. We still keep hearing more, and so we are going to continue to seek more voices. There's a concept that we learned about from architecture called threshold fear, which is this sort of what makes a person feel welcome to cross the threshold into an institution or a building or not. And given what we've heard from the women we've spoken to, we're very interested in this concept, so we're sort of pursuing that further. We're also going to plan to use GIS. We're interested in looking at the distribution of the different food stores around the different childcare locations, but from what we've heard, it validates what you guys said, that there's no one factor that determines where people shop. And then our aim is to, when we reach saturation, then work on developing a quantitative instrument so that we can really use, you know, a larger data set to help bring the voices of these workers into the discussion. Thank you. And I had a really interesting conversation with the woman at the California Newsreel booth. They have this new video. They're the people who did Unnatural Causes, and they have one now on childcare, the raising of America. And so she gave me a bunch of postcards that are over there. There's a free preview screening tomorrow. And our poster's at 3:30 tomorrow. Just kidding about the 4:30. Yes. So New Jersey is the site of the, can you say it again? National Early Care Learning Collaborative. I know I didn't get that right, but are either of these sites involved? I don't know. I know that at the center number two that I talked about, that's a YMCA center, and so they're very deeply involved in CAT and Go Foods and all kinds of recommendations and training. And there have been services provided for the staff. The Y is a big implementer of the DPP, the Diabetes Prevention Program, and that's been made available to the staff.
Have the childcare workers talked about how their food experiences have come into the workplace and their interactions with children?
You know, they did. So the question is, have the childcare workers talked about how their food experiences come into the workplace and their interactions with children? We sort of specifically were asking about their food shopping experiences. I want to say in part because I think then the talking about the internal sort of food with the kids gets into a whole different realm, and we're going through their employers. I think there's a lot of really interesting work that could be done and tapped into there, but I feel like it would be a sort of a second set of interviews or focus groups. It came up a little bit. And also, interestingly, I think they enjoyed having the opportunity to talk about some of the discrimination, and so work at the center came up more in terms of experiences of discrimination and racism with parents at the child care center.
Did you look or did you find any patterns between these two centers which look so different, and probably even the children and the families that they're catering to are also very different? So I think you could make a case to, you know, on that logic of social justice. If you see those differences that start even with workers that are taking care of children with more or less resources, right?
Yeah. So the question is about really looking into differences across the two different childcare centers. And so what's interesting, I don't think there's probably much difference at all in terms of the backgrounds and resources available to the families served. At both of the child care centers, although the wages are higher at one, the tuition rates are comparable. So that's a whole other question, is what people pay for childcare and what their childcare workers are being paid. There were definitely differences, and I think we assumed that there would be differences. I think what struck us more was the similarities that we found. So both childcare centers talked about gluten-free, they both talked about organic, they both talked about special family needs, they both talked about being concerned about their children's health and well-being. The second childcare center talked about quantity and about being sure that their kids weren't hungry, and that didn't come up with the workers at the first one. But we were pretty struck by the similarities in some ways. So why use focus groups and interviews? I think that's a really good question. It's a mix that I tend to embrace in work, because I think that I love focus groups, because I think you get, especially for topics like this, I mean, you know, there's parts in the audio transcript where everyone is laughing or talking at the same time, and it's just, you know, these big neon signs of cues that this is meaningful or important. But at the same time, some people just are so uncomfortable participating in focus groups. They won't speak. And so I tend towards that kind of approach so that we can be inclusive of a variety of voices. I don't think we've compared yet, and I think maybe we would want to do this, would be to look at, are there different kinds of themes coming out from the interviews versus from the focus groups? I think it goes both ways. So are there some topics that people would only feel comfortable talking about in one-on-one, or are there some topics that they would only maybe feel comfortable talking about in groups? And I think that, you know, some of the unspoken factors that happen when you walk in a room, so the racial distribution of the participants and the moderators, is going to affect comfort in talking about factors related to race. And a whole variety of different factors could come into play. But that's why I tend to, for the kind of topics that I look at, I tend to really like to do a mix so that you can sort of try and tease out whatever there is. I think I need to stop.
Marketing as a way of encouraging people, hey, try this, how about a healthy salad today? things like that. So again, the instrument can help you capture that. I say that in our experience, because we work with food stores as well, the experience was not as good with an end air. In part because we focus on supermarkets, and those, you know, really wasn't much a matter of availability or quality. And price was also sort of like a no-no for supermarkets. So always the focus on was the marketing, you know, tasting, activities, cooking, demonstrations, scavenger, you know, kind of activities, and then air doesn't really capture any of that. So I would say, if it doesn't what you do, it could be a good instrument, but I wouldn't recommend it just always for any intervention. Your second comment?
The average.
Well, we debated a lot about this. So since we're using the aggregate data from an entire buffer, how should we use the data? Is, you know, averaging, like you see, as Jen mentioned, if you have a great supermarket in your neighborhood that provides a lot of different healthy foods at good price, good quality, well, maybe that really meets the needs of your family. What cares? You know, who cares if there are two other small stores that are a bit more, you still have that good restaurant and can serve the needs of your family. So we thought, under that logic, perhaps we should go with what's the best that's available in this buffer, and is that good enough? For restaurants, we also debated. So how should we do with restaurants? Is having a great restaurant enough with all the best scores, or should we look at the mix? So we're still talking and discussing on how to do this with that. But for now, we thought, let's go with the optimistic scenario of, you know, what's the best we can have access to. And I don't think there's a right answer just yet.
I would just say, though, that I thought that was a really effective way to present it, because if you see the mean and the, you know, not just the ideal score, but, you know, what is someone in that buffer, what's the highest in that buffer, that is a pretty effective way.
It definitely shows huge room for improvement. Yeah. Even if you go with the best that you can find.